today. Some of you know Jarrell and I have been out of town for a few days, went down to Tampa to a leadership conference at Florida College. Had a very good trip. Got to see Brendan while we were down there. He's doing well, and we're pleased that he's down there and he's got the social part down and he's working on the academics. He is doing well, and we were very glad to see that. And got to see a lot of friends of ours down there that we've known over the years, so it was sort of a reunion for us, and we were uplifted by being there with everyone. We do want to talk this morning and continue in our series in Matthew chapter 5, talking about the Sermon on the Mount and looking at the different subjects that Jesus addresses here in this section of Scriptures. In this particular section in Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 38, Jesus is dealing with the way that we treat one another, and particularly how we respond when we are mistreated, or you know, what do we do? Do we retaliate, or do we have a kind of a sacrificial attitude when it comes to things that may be done to us? How is it that we respond to different situations? And as we have noted in other lessons, that there were particular things that people in that day thought about the law and practiced in regard to the law, that Jesus had a higher standard than what it is that they were doing. Many times they were not following the intent of the law. And here in Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 38, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil, but if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. So there are some interesting instructions in here, and we need to think about how is it that we react when you are wrongly treated. Do you react in kind, repaying evil for evil, or do you just stand there and take whatever abuse is given? What is the proper way to respond? And what we've already noted in our study is that Jesus contrasted his righteousness with the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. He already talked about the subjects of murder and anger and adultery and swearing oaths that we've looked at in other lessons. But here, we want to specifically look at what does this mean, an eye for an eye? And I think we know what that means when we use that expression, an eye for an eye. That means that we're going to respond to someone in the same way that they treated us. That we are going to get payback. Or we're going to give payback. So are we in a world that is built on paying people back for evils that are done? Well, yes, you can see that. You can see that in the world that if someone insults you, the tendency is people will insult back. Or if somebody hurts you, you want to lash out and hurt them back. In fact, there's movies that are built upon this very idea of revenge and retaliation, and something has been done to me, something has been done to my family, and I'm going to pay them back. So that's what we see as the meaning of an eye for an eye. It means retaliation or retribution. And the Jews in the first century also seemed to have that idea that they were going to repay this, that this is the principle that is taught. First of all, the Lord specifically condemned retaliation and personal retribution in the law of Moses. So, where they were picking this up from, we'll look at that and see what really was the intent of the law and how it was being misapplied. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18 says, "You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." So this idea to love your neighbor as yourself, that was not something that was new when Jesus taught it. This was not new information. And not taking vengeance This is not new information either when Jesus is teaching this. So when we read about the principle of an eye for an eye, that is a biblical principle. But you know, where did that come from? Well, if you look back in Exodus chapter 21, you'll see this principle. Exodus chapter 21 in verses 24 and 25. Exodus chapter 21, 24 and 25. An eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. We also see this in Deuteronomy chapter 19. The judges shall inquire diligently, and if a witness is a false witness and has accused his brother falsely, then you shall do to him as he had meant to do to his brother. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and the rest shall hear and fear, and shall never again commit any such evil among you. Your eye shall not pity, it shall be life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. So here we have instruction that's given to the individual to not take vengeance or bear a grudge. But then you see here in Exodus and Deuteronomy, it's eye for eye, hand for hand, foot for foot. So when we read about this principle of an eye for an eye, it's always given in terms of Israel's civil law. This is something that a person is not supposed to handle individually. This is a civil judgment. This is a civil rendering, a civil punishment. And so what was happening is that, you know, these statements were laws for civil courts to apply. And that's what you see here in Exodus and in Deuteronomy. They were given to God the priest and meriting out a proper punishment. But what the scribes and Pharisees were doing is they interpreted these to justify personal retribution or personal vengeance. And so God had given this guidance to the judges of Israel when deciding cases that punishment's supposed to fit the crime. And this was supposed to, you know, these instructions, as you see, you know, reading this, you can tell that this is meant not to extract more than is appropriate for a specific crime. That, you know, that you're not supposed to try to get more than what was just. You know, the punishment shouldn't be less than the crime. You know, your eye shall not pity, meaning the punishment should not be less than the crime, but the punishment shouldn't be more than the crime. So that's where you get this phrase, life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. And so this was God's principle for Israel's court system and the judgments that they passed. But this law did not teach the individuals, okay, well, you can take this into your own hands. You can do this on your own. And that's where the misinterpretation of this was coming from. Look at these scriptures here. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Proverbs 25, verse 21. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. If he's thirsty, give him water to drink. Proverbs 24, verse 29. Do not say, I will do to him as he has done to me. I will pay the man back for what he has done. And so that's not the attitude you're supposed to have. I'm going to get even. I'm going to pay them back. It's eye for eye, tooth for tooth. And so when Jesus says, you've heard it said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth, what he's saying is that people have misapplied what the intent of this was. That this was intended for the civil courts. This was intended for judges. This is intended for law keepers, for those that would uphold the law, that enforce the law. And so it's not for you to take vengeance personally. And so when we understand that does help us to to put this into context of what it is that Jesus would have us to understand. And he gives us more instruction here in chapter 5, verses 39 through 42. He explains this principle and he gives us some illustrations to show what it is that he expects. One of the things that he says is that in verse 39, he says, "Do not resist the one who is evil." Well, we need to talk about that. What does that mean? You know, we live in a world that is evil. Are we not ever supposed to oppose the devil? Are we not supposed to oppose evil? I think we pretty much know the answer to that because we can see that in other places. In James chapter 4 and verse 7, "Submit yourself to God, but resist the devil and he will flee from you." 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 9, "Resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world." We are also told in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 to resist evil when it's in the church. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 13, "God judges those outside. Purge the evil person from among you." And if you remember the context of that, the person that was in adultery and they were accepting of that, they were told to get that person to repent and or to purge that. So the expression, you know, not letting the little bit of leaven is going to leaven the whole lump was used in that regard to, you've got to purge evil from among you. And so when Jesus tells those that are listening on the Sermon on the Mount to not resist evil, that's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about, well, you just ignore evil and, you know, if there's evil around, you just don't say anything about it. In the context here, what he's talking about is this personal vengeance. It's in context of this eye for eye, tooth for tooth. You know, it's not your job to go out and repay every evil that's being done. He's saying that in context of this taking the law into your own hands. You're not supposed to take the law into your own hands. You're supposed to let the government do that. That's what the context is here. And so someone doing harm to us, what's the principle? Are we going to retaliate? And these four illustrations here that he uses help us to understand what this might look like in our lives. First of all, he tells us to turn the other cheek. Back up here in the slide. So to turn the other cheek. So this first illustration is a picture of a physical offense or an insult. You know, when we the slapping of a person on a cheek, you know, was a showing of extreme contempt. I think that's true in Jesus' day, and I think it's still true today, that if somebody slaps another person, that's certainly an expression of contempt. Depending on the context of it. So, you know, we use this as an idiom today in our language. When somebody insults us or there's some wrong done against us, we say, well, that was a slap in the face. Not that somebody literally slapped us, but we know what that expression means, that it's whatever it was that was done that prompted us to say that was a slap in the face. We considered that a sign of contempt. So what Jesus is saying is, what are you supposed to do when somebody insults you? What are you supposed to do when somebody shows contempt for you or is deeply offensive to you? Jesus says, well, turn the other cheek. Oh, well, wish he wouldn't have said that, but that's what he said. Because that's hard to do. Jesus says, turn the other cheek. Don't respond evil for evil. Don't respond in kind. Don't respond and retaliate like you're tempted to do. And remember what Jesus is saying. You've heard it said, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. You know, that's not what the law was saying. You are not allowed to repay evil for evil. If somebody does something evil to you, don't go back to the law and say, well, it said eye for eye, so I'm going to repay them evil. No. That was talking about what can be done in the court system. We do not have the right to return fire with equal proportion just because somebody harmed us. Somebody hurts us, and what do we automatically want to do? Oh, just give them a big hug. That's not what we want to do. We want to retaliate. And we want to retaliate with equal proportion or more. And we think we're justified in doing so. And Jesus said, you're not justified in doing that. That you don't retaliate when you're harmed or insulted. The next expression or the next example that he gives is give them your cloak. If somebody would sue you to take your tunic, give your cloak as well. So there's a few things to note here about to give us the proper understanding of what Jesus is teaching. First of all, one of the things that we forget here is that he says, if somebody sues you to get your tunic. So this is not a picture of somebody, well, he comes up to you on the street and grabs your coat and runs. That's not the picture. It's not a picture of a robbery. It's a picture that perhaps you owe something to the person that they've gone to court to sue you for what is owed. And we need to also understand what it means to give up one's cloak. And under the law of Moses, it's interesting to see that giving up a cloak was something that was, or having a cloak was one of the rights that they had. In Exodus chapter 22, verse 25 says, if you lend money to any of my people, with you who is poor, you shall not be like a money lender to him. You shall not exact interest from him. If you ever take your neighbor's cloak in pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down. For that is his only covering. It is his cloak for his body. And what else shall he sleep? And if he cries to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate. Isn't that interesting? Because what it is saying is that if a cloak was given as a pledge, or it's given as a promise for payment, it was to be returned to that person at night. You could hold it during the day, but return it to him at night because he needs that covering to stay warm. The cloak was a right that the Israelites had when you read this here. So the point that Jesus is making is that you need to be willing to pay your debts and even more. So if someone sues you for your tunic, you give them your cloak also. And so you give what is owed and you be willing to give even more. And the passage that Rex read for us this morning, Luke chapter 19, the story of Zacchaeus. I know you were all singing the song in your head when he was reading it. And King James doesn't call him a wee little man. But anyway, it says in here, when Zacchaeus is confronted by Jesus and says, I'm going to your house. And Zacchaeus is a tax collector. And what was common among tax collectors was to charge people more than what they really owed. Well, what would they do with that extra money? Well, they keep it for themselves. And so tax collectors had a reputation for that. And Zacchaeus, it seems to be saying that if he had ever defrauded anybody, had ever taken more than what he should, that he was going to repay that. Not only was he going to do that, he was going to do it four times over. So this, I believe, is the same principle that Jesus is making here. If someone sues you for your tunic, give him your cloak also. Give more than what you owe. And the person certainly, in the context we see in Exodus chapter 22, the person had the right to keep his cloak, but Jesus says, give it to him. And so, be generous. Don't be selfish. He also uses the expression in verse 41 to go 2 miles. Matthew chapter 5, verse 41. And if anyone verse 41. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Well, what does that mean? Why would somebody force you to go 1 mile? You know, I'm not going to walk outside today and say, okay, Jason, I want you to go run 1 mile for me. And Jason said, oh, I'll run 2 for you. You know, why would we do that? Why would we even think about that? Well, this was something that came from the Roman times. And the Romans by law, they could commandeer civilians to carry the luggage of military personnel for a prescribed distance. It was 1 mile, 1 Roman mile. And Jesus is saying, rather than going 1 mile, he's teaching go two. So this illustration of going 1 mile would certainly be something that was on their mind, because if I was them and I saw any Roman carrying some luggage, I might want to go the other way, because I would not want to be commandeered to be obligated to do that. But Jesus is saying, if you're obligated to do one, do two. And so the picture here is not doing the bare minimum. If you're compelled to do something, then be willing to do that, but be willing to go the extra mile. And so that's where we get that expression from. We say it all the time today, don't we? Going the extra mile. And probably, you know, 95% of people out there have no idea where it comes from. It comes from right here in the scriptures, and it comes from what was going on in the political environment of that day. But go the extra mile. Cheerfully accept, you know, what would really be an imposition to you. Don't insist on your rights, but be willing to do more. Verse 42 tells us, give the one who begs from you, and do not refuse those who borrow from you. So this final illustration is the willingness to give of your property or give to another. The implication here is probably something that would refer to somebody that really has a need. You know, that, well, you're not just, you know, fulfilling somebody's wishes and wants. You know, I'm not going to go to Rex and say, hey, I want to go to Disney World next month, and the scriptures tell me that you have to give me whatever it is that I ask of you, so I'm asking for 4-day park hoppers, and so I want that from you. No, we're not. That's not what this is saying. We're not fulfilling somebody's wish list, but we're not to refuse those who have a need. And not the principle that we see in the scriptures is not to see our property as ours. It belongs to God, and we're to give to those who have need. And so this illustration here that Jesus is giving is really counter to the way they were applying the law. They were all about retribution and revenge and returning evil for evil, but Jesus has turned this around. No, you're not to return evil for evil. You're to return good for evil. You're to go the extra mile. You're to give to those who need. And so what Jesus is teaching here is what he wants to be the characteristics of those that are in his kingdom. And first of all is that we don't retaliate. An eye for an eye does not mean you get to respond with equal treatment. That he's saying there's no justification in doing that. What is it that kids will say when you see, you know, them, you know, retaliating? Just think about, you know, when you see a personal foul in football. And what do we sometimes say when we see somebody on our team got penalized? Well, he didn't start it. You know, it was, you know, the officials didn't see the person who threw the first punch, but it's the one that retaliates that sometimes gets the foul. And say, well, that's not fair. He didn't start it. And the one who retaliated is the one that got saw. And kids will say the same thing when they're fighting with their brothers or sisters. You know, he started it. And, of course, the response that a parent is going to have is, it doesn't matter what they did to you. That does not give you the right to retaliate. And Jesus is telling these little kids, Pharisees and scribes, that you do not get to retaliate just because somebody else started it. Do not retaliate. And don't be so cognizant of what you think your rights are. In each one of these illustrations that Jesus is using here, you think about, well, that's not right. You know, my rights are being revoked. Jesus said that's true. Your rights are being you're going to voluntarily revoke your rights. We don't say I have a right. You give up your rights for others. And personal sacrifice is it requires that. Jesus didn't stand up for his rights, did he? Jesus gave up his rights for us. Jesus didn't deserve what it was that he received. So he was an example of that. And so that's the big idea here, is that you don't make your rights the basis for your relationships with others. You be prepared to take a lowly position as a humble servant. And we see good examples of this in the Scriptures. Joseph is certainly a great example of this when he was reunited with his brothers in Genesis chapter 45. And so, you know, if you know what sometimes we would think would make a great story is when you know Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, you know, and they realize who he is. And of course they were scared when they did see him, because what did they think he was going to do? They thought he was going to retaliate. Throw them all in a dungeon. You know, you sold me into slavery. Look what I can do to you now. But that's not what he did. Joseph was the perfect example of what we see Jesus encouraging here in Matthew chapter 5. We also see that in the life of David multiple times when he spared the life of Saul. And of course, we see that with Jesus. So don't look to do the minimum for others. Go the extra mile. Do more than what is required. Don't look for the least that you can do. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 39, the principle here is to not resist evil in the way that we would retaliate. You know, what we're talking about here is doing good in the face of evil. It's very easy to return evil for evil, blow for blow. In Romans chapter 12, and verse 14, Paul said, "Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, as far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Wow, it seems like Paul just wrote a commentary on Matthew chapter 5, doesn't it? Because he helps us to understand what it is that a Christian should be. Justifiable retaliation is not the picture of a Christian. Picture of a Christian is sacrifice. Give your cheek, give your tunic, give your body, give your possessions. Jesus gave his life. We're to be a sacrifice. We're to offer ourselves as sacrifice. I know this is a lesson that's much easier to preach than it is to live, and most of them are that way. But this is the standard that Jesus has set before these that he was teaching. And it's for us as well. So let's keep these things in mind as we try to pattern ourselves after Jesus Christ and be more Christ-like in the way that we live and the way that we treat each other. We can help you in any way this morning to respond to the gospel of Christ. We invite you to come while we stand together and sing.